webinar, Penumbra Shields, speaking about COVID, COVID recovery, and the impact on health system pharmacies. Per usual, we want this to be a very casual format. So our intention today is really to provide you updates on how COVID continues to impact our health system specialty pharmacy landscape, provide you with some actionable insights on the operational changes required, and give you real world experience. This is definitely a casual sharing environment. We're gonna go fast. It's hopefully gonna take less than a half hour. We're gonna give you insights from our guest speakers and our internal Shields experts. And please make sure that you use the chat feature if you have any questions, or feel free to reach out to any of us after the fact. So today's speakers include myself, Erin Hendrick, Chris Pacillo, and Stephen Davis. We make up the Specialty Pharmacy Health System Strategy Team here at Shields Health Solutions, and we're really excited to be joined by Darren Lowe, who's the Director of Contracting here at Shields as well. Darren's going to provide a number of insights into how payers have reacted to the COVID crisis and what specialty pharmacies should know as they are going into recovery mode. So today, COVID in the United States. So as of this morning, there are about 112,000 deaths associated with COVID and almost 2 million confirmed cases. That said, we are seeing a bit of a decline in terms of cases and deaths day over day. Restrictions have started to loosen almost universally. Many states have continued to see hospitalizations rise, though, especially post-Labor Day or Memorial Day. Elective surgical case volumes remain very low. Clinic visits seem to be rebounding, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but it certainly is a mixed bag of telehealth and in-person visits. And our health systems have continued to watch their generalized NOI plummet independent of their local COVID-19 trends. And so these elective surgical volumes and clinic volume decreases really are universal, independent of where in the country people have been and how COVID has affected their local community. As we look at specialty pharmacy, it continues to demonstrate significant resiliency to date in terms of operating revenue. So when we compare run rates from pre-COVID, so January and February of 2020, to what we're seeing now, we've seen consistent increases in operating revenue month over month. You saw a high in March when a lot of people were intending to fill for fear that they may not get their prescriptions later. But we've continued to see a rise, and now in June, an even greater rise than we had seen before. Originally, one of the fears was that in March, we saw an increase in the average day supply dispensed, and we thought that that may have a negative impact on future months, that we were stealing from future months for the purposes of increased day supply. That pattern didn't really hold true, and it's not in line with the operating revenue. So that the nice thing is we're not necessarily seeing that this has dramatically impacted future state revenue. We do see a continued use of longer day supply, and we think that that's here to stay as the world has changed. In terms of total specialty appointments, the nice thing is that in June, we have seen a significant rebound. That is a combination of in-person and telehealth visits, but we're seeing patients come back to seeking care. It may be a different level of care, and this is very much dependent upon the disease state as well, but we are seeing new patients come in. And then new patient starts, which had been down pretty dramatically in March, April, and May, while still dramatically down, aren't nearly as far down as we saw in April and May. And so it seems to be on the rise. So again, this is a much more positive outlook than we had in May as we look to the future of health system pharmacy. But operating revenue remains very, very strong. So the outlook, so return of clinic volumes. We're gonna talk a little bit about telehealth and patient perception in a bit. But June is showing those strong growth trends towards a return to budget, but a mixture of telehealth and in-person visits. Obviously, from a budget perspective, clinic dollars, it's a mixed bag in terms of how telehealth is being reimbursed. It's better than it has been historically. But from a specialty pharmacy perspective, most people have managed to qualify their claims appropriately or use them as, you know, own use, and are seeing the same levels as specialty pharmacy revenue. Overall prescribing actually hasn't changed that dramatically during COVID, though specific disease states have been severely impacted. And so we see Hep C new starts being deferred, and the use of RA drugs has waned, mostly because of the immunosuppressive effects. But other disease states have, we've seen the prescribing as normal. And then the filling, at least in their health system pharmacies, as evidenced by the revenue, seems to be consistent. Again, we're trying to play it carefully and look towards the future, but the revenue numbers have been very positive and the overall prescribing has been relatively positive. That said, it's very unclear how to budget both visit volumes and prescription volumes for the next 12 months. We don't yet know if the floor has been pulled out, specifically because of this deferral of care impact. So patients haven't necessarily been coming in if they weren't previously diagnosed. And so there's a lot of concern across the country about the impacts of that 4 month delay in seeking care. And we don't know how that's going to play out in terms of future state care, how sick patients are going to be, and what drugs they will start on. But I'm going to turn it over to Chris and have him talk a little bit about HRSA and the impacts there.
So as you guys know, and have probably seen, with HRSA, there's now some new guidance that came out recently allowing for immediate enrollment into the 340B program, which is different than it was in the past, where you did have before the requirement for any 340B eligible clinic to be listed on the OPA website that had to be through the had to be on the Medicare cost report for the prior year. And essentially what is going on now is that the 340B program will recognize those sites immediately as soon as they start billing as an HOPD, rather than needing to be on the cost report for the prior year, so making that switch over a little bit sooner. Some of the other things that they have some additional leniency around are some of the health records, but realizing that, you know, the same definition of a patient still has to apply. And then when we look at telehealth, those locations that the telehealth visits come from need to be aligned with the splitter and location file and need to be part of it. And realizing the audit process is definitely going to be different during the pandemic, a lot of those audits are starting to happen remotely. So one of the things I wanted to talk about with telehealth, and Aaron mentioned before, is that we're seeing some return to clinic in some of our disease states, but is telehealth really here to stay? And this interesting statistic I saw was that there's estimated to be 1 billion telehealth visits in the United States in 2020. Granted, 900 million are going to be related to COVID, either through patients not wanting to go see their physician, or because a patient has a cough and a fever and wants to be evaluated whether or not they had COVID when they needed a physician to write them a order to get tested. So some of that is due to both of those things. But when we look at Medicare beneficiaries, and as we know, back in March, Medicare allowed some increased coverage for telehealth visits, we see this massive increase over the last few months, where we see 1.3 million patients getting telehealth services in 1 week in April. So wondering, as people become more comfortable with it, is this going to be something that we see more and more of, and how is it going to affect specialty pharmacy in the future? So one of the interesting things that I saw in this surge in telehealth and that equated telehealth to mobile banking. So if you remember, banks really tried to get people to use mobile services for a long time, telephone banking, things like that. And it didn't really happen for a very long time. And now we're in the state where I don't really remember the last time I walked into a bank. And the same thing is happening with telehealth, but a lot quicker. And one of the quotes I saw online was that the adoption rates that we've seen just in the last 2 months really probably would have taken 3 to 5 years if it wasn't for COVID. So telehealth is probably here to stay. And some other statistics that I found interesting was that back in October 2019, J.D. Power did an analysis and found that only about 1 in 10 Americans had ever used any kind of telehealth service. And this could even include like things like patient portals.
Fast forward to April 2020, and 1 in 8 Americans had a video telehealth visit just in 1 month. So we're definitely seeing a big increase in telehealth. One of the issues, though, that we still have is that about 10% of our country still lack access to broadband. So making those visits impossible for some of the more rural places where telehealth really started to roll out. Coverage for telehealth, as Aaron alluded to, has increased. In March 2020, CMS expanded their coverage for telehealth. In April and May, a lot of the commercial insurers began adopting some more lenient telehealth policies. There is still some variation with some of the smaller plans and some of the local plans where the self-insured might have opted out of that. And a lot of them are extending this through the end of 2020, and it's still yet to be seen if there is going to be a permanent change. Also, in response, the AFP and the AMA have released guidelines on how to properly use telehealth. They've listed some vendor options. And really what this all means for specialty pharmacy is patients are returning to clinic in person. Patients are going to clinic virtually. But for those pharmacies that utilize maybe in-clinic technicians or somebody who's really helping to direct scripts internally, what does that mean for the future? And I think that there's a lot of different solutions that are out there, either by capturing those telehealth visits, doing some additional patient outreach, refocusing into clinics where patients do really have to come in for their appointments. So I think it's still yet to be seen, but still a very interesting dynamic and some changes that are occurring.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. And as we have all seen and experienced, this ongoing COVID-19 public health crisis is causing an unprecedented shift in the way Americans view and access healthcare. So I was looking at a recent survey that was released by the Alliance of Community Health Plans and the Academy of Managed Care Pharmacy, and it explores the changes in consumers' healthcare behavior as a result of COVID-19. So as you can see, per the survey, many, including vulnerable populations, are delaying healthcare. 72% say the pandemic has impacted their healthcare. 41% have delayed care during the pandemic. And what I also find interesting is that 38% will continue to delay care in the near future. Many also said during the survey that they are uncomfortable visiting medical settings during the pandemic. And so 45% are uncomfortable visiting a walk-in urgent care. 42% stated that they are uncomfortable going to the hospital. And 31% are uncomfortable visiting a doctor's office. But what's also interesting is that when there was a question asked on the survey of those interested in being tested, 39% actually said that they would be comfortable being tested in their pharmacy. And then the next slide, where it says the trust in doctors is high, but respondents worry about the safety of traditional clinics. 41% have actually said that they are concerned about being able to see their doctor in a safe environment. And I think that's one of the things, as Aaron was talking about earlier, and what Chris was alluding to, of why we're seeing a slow returns to the actual traditional clinics. And then what's promising is that pharmacy usage remains strong. So mail order prescriptions increase. There was a 47% stated that they've received prescription medications in the last 90 days. So as Aaron was showing the graphic earlier, there is an average day supply usage that is really good. 90% have gotten their pharmacies from a local pharmacy. 9% had medications home delivered from a local pharmacy. And 24% are getting medications through a mail order pharmacy. So specialty pharmacy has shown that it's adaptable and it's strong during this COVID-19 pandemic. I also think this is a good transition to Darren Lowe as he discusses how him and his team have adapted to this landscape and what the payers are doing. So Darren, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Stephen. So the payer contracting department of Shields is focused on accessing new patient populations, accessing payer networks on behalf of our partner pharmacies. As part of this COVID crisis, we've spent a lot of time managing and monitoring PBM changes and making sure that we can communicate those to our partners and to maximize any opportunities in new processes that due to kind of operational and structural changes the PBMs implemented during the COVID crisis. I would say that the the name of the game this week is actually a more of a return to normal. We monitor the changes on a weekly basis, and actually this week's updates from the major PBMs all reflect in some capacity a return to business as usual. So from a refill exception perspective, all of those relaxed rules have expired or will expire in the next week or two across Caremark and Optum and Express Scripts. However, the extended day supply relaxed opportunities are still in effect, most likely and probably through the end of the summer. Signature exceptions also continue to be in effect. So for patients uncomfortable, signing a log, the PBMs are allowing waivers to that. There's a lot of detail on this. I'm just hitting the high notes. What is in red is really what's new this week. So you see the red and under the refill exceptions. Those are all going back to normal operating processes. On the next slide, for delivery copay exceptions, this is less relevant to independent pharmacies, but just so you're aware from a market perspective that each of the major PBMs are offering free or low cost delivery through their mail order or specialty channels as a service to members that are unable to actually get into a pharmacy. The other main thing that's being rolled back is that the TA exception process, with the exception of Caremark, which is extending previously approved TAs through 9/30, all of the other for ESI and Optum both have reverted back to standard PA processes, and those extensions have since expired. And then finally, from a quantity limit perspective, a lot of the COVID-related therapeutics continue to have some level of quantity limits that are mandated by the PBMs, and we can expect to see those to continue at least through the end of the summer. From a network enrollment perspective, there's been a couple of interesting changes. This is most applicable for pharmacies seeking network participation that for networks that they're currently not in. So for pharmacies that already have this really hasn't been any change. But if you are seeking to be a Medicare DME provider through the 855S application to bill for Medicare Part B as in boy claims, the CMS has waived a lot of the requirements as part of that application, notably the fees, the site visit, and some of the licensure requirements. From practical purpose, like this process would typically take 2 to 3 months, and we're currently seeing pharmacies being rolled by CMS in as little as 4 weeks. Conversely, network enrollment for Express Scripts and Caremark has actually grown during the COVID-related crisis. Typically, a pharmacy seeking network enrollment and credentialing through ESI would take a couple weeks to a month. This is now north of or close to 2 months on average. Caremark has, where it was traditionally 45 to 60 days, is now running 90 to 120 days. Our most recent feedback from them is that they're kind of back to closer to the 90 day relative to the 120, but certainly taking many months to for a new pharmacy to be enrolled with Caremark. And then I also wanted to just touch on a couple of other slightly non-COVID related trends, but the certainly important things that are happening in 2020 as it relates to the PBM and payer industry. We continue to see a lot of industry consolidation, a lot of the acquisitions and mergers that happened in 2019 have been operationalized and implemented in early in 2020, notably Aetna, Caremark, Cigna moving from Optum to Express Scripts, Anthem moving from Express Scripts to Caremark as branded as their own PBM. And then Prime Therapeutics really outsourcing their pharmacy benefit management to Express Scripts on April 1st, and then Optum's acquisition of Diplomat. So we're seeing an increasingly concentrated industry with really only a few key players left from a pharmacy management perspective, as well as, you know, the national mail order specialty pharmacy perspective. And I think that, you know, that there needs at some point to be some regulatory pushback to the monopolistic power that these organizations are gaining in the marketplace. So we continue to monitor these changes and look for opportunities to continue to push for payer access. But I would say that we're focusing on with Prime kind of leaving the ball game. It's really Caremark, Express Scripts, and Optum are pretty much dominating the market. The final thing I wanted to just quickly touch on is that on the medical benefit side, health systems are getting a lot of pressure from payers on their reimbursement related to provider-administered drugs, typically infusions. And so we, you know, are constantly monitoring these medical policy changes that are meaningfully impactful to the financial health of hospitals generally, and certainly impactful to some of our partners as well. We've seen United try to pull 47 drugs out of, you know, what's permissible under buy and bill. They postponed that due to COVID, but still they are aggressively want to enact that strategy. Cigna is doing it in a little more gradual fashion. Over time, they continue to expand the list of drugs that must be white bagged into a provider administered hospital patient setting. 9 new drugs are going to be under this policy as of September 30th. Also, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee has been doing something similar as well. And so, you know, as part of our goal of payer access, we continually monitor on a daily and weekly basis changes in the marketplace, COVID and non-COVID related, that can impact our partners, and we work with them too on strategies that exploit opportunities and mitigate some of the strategies that the PBMs are implementing.
Thank you, Darren, so much. And apologies again for yet another IT glitch that we had. This seems to be the new norm of life of our broadband failing, exactly to what Chris had pointed out. Even when you have the best technology, telehealth will be a challenge because sometimes things don't work as intended. But thank you for bearing with us, and thank you so much to Darren. Obviously, all of this information will be sent out to everyone who had registered for the webinar. We'll send it out both as a transcript, the slides, and the video itself. If you do have any questions, our email addresses are here, and we certainly can forward anything to Darren that you may have. And we look forward to you joining us next time. Thank you so much.